Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour. For the 24th day of February, the year 2020, this is Air Force veteran David Corey along with my co-host, Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us this evening. Hello, Richard.
Hey there, David, and good evening, everybody. We have lots of news and information for you veterans and their families, so stay tuned. It's going to be another fast hour of a lot of stuff, so first want to tell you that this is a call-in show. We welcome your views, your comments, and your questions. We do not have a guest tonight, so please call in and tell us about your situation. You know, we got a lot of Camp Lejeune water contamination veterans that are out there, and I'm on your Facebook page. Pick up the phone and call us. Tell us about what's going on with your case. You know, we got a David and I have a number of Camp Lejeune water contamination compensation cases pending, so you know, we can share our bits of information. But then, and that number to call in, by the way, is 1-888-627-6008. Again, that's 1-888-627-6008. And before we get going, I know my son, who just got married yesterday, and his new wife, Danielle. I want to congratulate them for their nuptials. And it was a wonderful family event, a lot of love in the air, and had a lot of friends, a lot of dancing, a lot of good times. So I want to congratulate my son and his wife, Danielle. And at this point, David, why don't you tell us about some of the news in Washington, D.C.
Well, there's a lot going on in Washington. And before the night's over, I want to cover some of the high points of the VA's proposed budget for the next fiscal year 2021. But as far as what's going on in Washington, D.C. and veterans, you know, Congress has House and Senate Veteran Affairs Committees. And over the next couple weeks, starting tomorrow, it's that time of year when all the veterans groups, veteran organizations, all the major ones or most of the major ones and a whole bunch of smaller ones appear before Congress and the House Committee and the Senate Committee, get together, and they hold joint hearings. Sounds like an efficient way to do business. And the purpose of those hearings is to hear the legislative goals, the presentations of these many veteran organizations. Those of you that are really interested, you can watch online. You don't have to go to Washington, D.C. It's all online. You can go to the websites for either the House Veteran Affairs Committee or the Senate Veteran Affairs Committee, and those are easy to remember. It's veterans.house.gov or veterans.senate.gov, and as I say, they start tomorrow, and they extend really for the next couple weeks. Our guest, looking ahead a couple weeks to March the 9th, our guest that week will be John Rotter, who is the communications director for the American Legion's National Headquarters. And he has to be on the show March the 9th, which is a Monday, because that week, the American Legion, that Wednesday of that week, March the 11th, American Legion leadership will be presenting its legislative goals to the Senate and the House committees. But starting tomorrow, disabled American veterans will be testifying before the Joint Committee at 2 p.m. That's February the 25th. And then on the 26th, there are the presentations of multiple organizations like Vietnam Veterans of America, AMVETS, a number of smaller, lesser-known organizations, but all important veteran groups. Again, you can tune in online, and they'll be presenting on February 26th at 2 p.m. And then on February 27th, you will have, and you can again watch this online, you'll have the Department of Veteran Affairs presenting their budget request for fiscal year 2021. And we all know that policy is driven so much by money, also the priorities that are set forth in that budget reflects what the VA wants to do, which hopefully will be based on good input from these veteran organizations. And then next week on March the 3rd, more of the veteran organizations like Paralyzed Veterans of America and a number of other ones, the Iraq-Afghanistan Veterans of America, a number of other groups will be presenting 2 p.m. on March the 3rd. Again, you can watch it online. And then the VFW, the Veterans of Foreign Wars, will be presenting on March the 4th, and then the American Legion on March the 11th. Although there will be, you know, well over a dozen of these organizations making presentations, I noticed the absence of some organizations, at least the list so far. I did not see, for instance, Concerned Veterans for America. I didn't see Military Veterans Advocacy. These are other groups that have ideas and have been very active. So mark your calendar if you're interested in seeing what your veteran organizations are doing. If you're a member of the American Legion, for instance, or the VFW, or Paralyzed Veterans of America, AMVETS, any of these groups, go to veterans.house.gov or veterans.senate.gov, and you can watch these hearings in progress. If you don't have time to watch the hearings, you can download the presentations and get a sense of what their goals are and see if you have any ideas, communicate those with those organizations. I've got more news before doing so. Let's go back over to Rick Hurley. Rick, what's on your mind? I heard you had some BVA hearings this past week. How'd those go?
Yes, we did. And these hearings, as you veterans may be aware, the BVA is now conducting these video hearings from the from your representative's office. In this case, my clients come to my office, the attorney's office, and it's such a better situation for veterans. You know, the old way was I'm just using St. Petersburg as an example. You go down to St. Pete. You check in. It's a very institutionalized setting. Sit in the cafeteria, kind of wait for your number to be called, and eventually they get to you. And there's always issues down there. But, you know, for the veteran, the average veteran, you got to drive 2, maybe 3 hours, maybe more to get down to the hearing. You have a hearing that might last an hour. And then you got to drive home. So it's a full day process. And for some cases, the hearing might be at 8:30 in the morning. So the veteran has to get down to the night before. So the new system is set up to alleviate that problem. It's set up for, you know, when you start thinking about veterans who live out in really, really rural areas in the Midwest and West. So this new system has been in place now for 6 to 8 months. I've used it a few times. They're still working out some kinks. We were supposed to start at 8:30, and it wasn't on my end, and I'm not a tech guy, so I was really happy about that. But on the BVA side, they had to figure out how to get the recording in place for the video, but after about an hour and a half, I guess we waited the first one. It was great. We had a super judge, Judge John Crowley. I've had Judge Crowley in the past. I really like him. He's a thinking judge. He really wants to get down to the issues. And one of the things he did, David, which I thought was great, is we had about 17 issues for this particular veteran. And he was going through, as we were giving our presentation, he was going through her file, and he realized that there was some evidence, that medical evidence that was not there. And he was, you know, when we were finished, he was pointing that out. And he said, you know, I need some more additional evidence pertaining to some of her disabilities. There was a knee issue, and then she had subsequent knee surgeries. So he wanted to get copies of all that evidence, all those records. And what was so great about him was he said to me, he said, I don't want to have to remand this case back to the VA. And I thought that was so cool when he said that. He said, I really want to try to resolve it without sending it back to the VA for further development, because he said, Mr. Early, you and I both know what that means. And I thought, wow, this is refreshing. And we have, you know, he gave us the usual additional 90-day period. And then he said, if you need any more time, reach out to me, and I'll give you more time. So here was a judge who was really trying to help the veteran. This veteran's case has been pending since 2011. He realized the VA had dropped the ball, and now he wanted to get to, you know, try to really resolve it for her. And I just thought it was terrific, David, you know, to get that. And we had a great give and take back and forth. We had a nice discussion about the case. He asked some questions. He asked me questions. And the hearing lasted about an hour and 20 minutes. And I should say, prior to even going, you know, starting the hearing, you know, my staff, we had some refreshments for the veteran and some of the witnesses, and we had donuts. It was just such a wonderful environment for the veteran to get ready for a hearing. And, you know, everyone's a little nervous before you have to testify. You know, you're sworn in and all that kind of stuff. So it was a great experience. So, you know, I look forward to doing more of those. In fact, I've got, I think, six pending between now and the end of April. Veterans out there, you know, if you have a representative, especially if you're in Florida and you're up in the northern part of Florida, tell your representative that, you know, you've heard about this, the opportunity to have a video from the representative's office, and you can actually do it from your own living room if you want. I haven't done that yet. I may do that down the road if I have a veteran who's seriously ill and unable to travel. So that's all available to the veteran, and you know, take advantage of it. Put yourself, I've been litigating all my life, and so make yourself as comfortable as you possibly can for the process. And I guarantee you, it's going to make the hearing better. You're going to feel better about the hearing. Yeah, I think you're going to get more accomplished because you're going to get rid of some of the stress of having to travel, waiting around. All those kind of things, David, you and I both know clients go through whenever they're facing a hearing. So, you know, right now, the client and I are in the process of digging up some more medical records and getting them over to the judge, and hopefully we're going to get a favorable decision without it having to be remanded back to the VA. And why is that important? Because when the VA gets a case, and it's been remanded, they're now obligated to do what they call further development, which might be do another CMP exam. It might be getting additional evidence as to service connecting the disability, maybe getting more buddy statements, but some sort of additional information to help further along and get a successful, favorable decision. The problem with that is we're now back dealing with the VA, and we all know the VA just kind of sits on their butts, and they don't really move, even though these judges put in their order, you know, you need to expedite the case. It's already been here once. Let's get rid of it. You know, the VA personnel really don't care what judges think anymore.
Right.
So, you know, we want to try to avoid that remand process. And you know, I think it's going to be on a case-by-case basis. In this case, the judge, he was the one who mentioned it to me. I mean, I didn't even ask him to, you know, Judge, can we figure out a way to avoid doing the remand? He's the one who brought it to my attention, and that's what he wanted to do. So I really want to commend him and any other judge that's out there doing that. I think that's just terrific. So it was a good hearing, and after we got rid of some of the technical difficulties, everything went very smoothly. So what do you think about this whole new process?
Well, one thing that's it's great from what you described. You said the hearing lasted about an hour and 20 minutes. I know from last couple BVA hearings that I did, they were video hearings, but they were at the St. Pete Regional Office. The new written BVA policy, which I realize some judges, to their credit, are not following, is that hearings will be 30 minutes. And I've seen that now on the BVA website as well as letters to the veterans. So their official policy is these hearings are 30 minutes, which is really ridiculous because it puts a lot of pressure to crunch a case down. But nevertheless, our approach has been, and my approach is, that we put our entire case in writing. And that forces the judge at some point, you know, after the hearing, when the judge is considering all the evidence of the case, to consider the written submission as well. So I think it really comes down to the luck of the draw, which judge you get. Because although for the most part, I think the judges have improved in their thoroughness and in their kind of pro-veteran attitude over the last 15, 20 years, there are still some judges, for whatever reasons, whatever their personalities, that or their workload, that they're going to hold you to the 30 minutes. And what they absolutely don't want you to do, or if they perceive that you're just repeating what you've put in writing, you know, they may interject, and it becomes almost more adversarial. It's not supposed to be, but it can seem that way.
I had one judge say to me, you know, David, when you and I prepare these statements for the client, these are the statement and the testimony of the client. There's nothing that's in the statement that the client hasn't thought about, hasn't been involved in the process of drafting it. And these are the client's thoughts. Yes, we edit it and we make sure that it's presented properly. But these aren't our words. These are the words of the client. So I had one judge who just, and he was an older guy. He was kind of ornery. And he said, I'm not going to sit here and just listen to a statement that you wrote on behalf of your client, Mr. Hurley. And I was like, whoa, judge, that's not what's going on here. And I resent that you would even make that insinuation that I'm putting words in my client's mouth. That's not, these are his words. And I really bit back at him because I was a little ticked off when he made that statement. And my client was ticked off because my client said, no, judge, these are my words. Mr. Hurley didn't, you know, put these words in my mouth. So you are right. You got some judges out there who, for whatever reason, maybe they've been in, around too long, and it's time for them just to step down and get some new blood in there. And that happens in any venue, whether it's in the VA world or state court, criminal court. You know, I've dealt with a lot of federal criminal judges, and I can tell you the ones who you knew it was time for them to retire and move on because they had just lost their patience.
I think some judges want to hear the veteran. And one of the last couple hearings that I had, the judge was definitely this way. The judge wanted to hear the veteran speak, and the veteran was right up front saying how nervous he was about this whole experience of having to testify, and it made the judge realize, you know, that the judge may do this every day for a living, but these veterans, this is a sort of a momentous occasion to be testifying, and it's high pressure. And but the judges want to hear the veteran undergo, I think, at least some of the judges, testifying live, you know, in response to live questions. So I think one way to satisfy that requirement is make sure that there is a fully detailed, thorough written statement that the veteran has, in the veteran's own words, but it's thorough. You may not have enough time to go over everything in the statement in a 30-minute hearing, and when you add also the legal arguments you have to make and the review of other evidence. But then to spend at least part of the time in some question-answer so that the veteran can be testifying essentially live, but I would never leave a case just up to that, because we all know how the live back and forth questioning, even with a veteran who is prepared, often comes out sounding kind of like scrambled eggs. It's not, you know, it's not always coherent thoughts, not always complete sentences. Sometimes, as I've noticed, when you later read the transcript, whoever does these transcripts for the VA, you know, you have to wonder how closely they're listening, because if they can't understand a word, they'll just put, like in parentheses, unintelligible, you know. And, yeah, you can go back and request that they redo the transcript, but that just takes more time. Or I've had a couple cases a while back where I felt the transcript was just wrong and incomplete and had to go through the effort to have that corrected, which you can do. But you got to be prepared for these hearings, and I think a combination of live back-and-forth questioning rather than just reading statements, but also having the thorough statements, is kind of the way to go at this point. And being prepared, especially since their policy is now in writing, being prepared for only having 30 minutes. And, you know, I think, Rick, you've been very fortunate with some of the hearings you've had recently where the judges have given you an hour, hour and a half.
Yeah.
There are some judges, you know, which are not going to do that. It's really luck of the draw.
You know, David, when I'm doing a hearing, you know, I'll tell the judge that, we have this statement that the veteran would like to present, and the judge is going to get a copy of it. It's going to be part of the attachment, the legal memorandum. And then I say, and Judge, after my client's finished, we invite you to ask my client any questions you may have for further, you know, understanding of what the issues are. And I have no problem with that, because I've been, like I said, I've been litigating for now 36 years. And I've done a lot of criminal law in federal court and state court. And I can tell you, and I was the law clerk, I can tell you, judges write out everything they're going to say on the record before they get on the bench. I help my judges write out sentencings, decisions for motions, whatever the case was. It was all done, and the reason that it was done that way, and it's still done that way, was because judges don't want to be appealed. And if they're going to be appealed, they want to be affirmed. And so they want to make sure that whatever they put on the record, it's going to pass muster at the appellate level. Well, this is no different. I want to make sure that what my client's going to say is going to cover the issues that are before the board. And I don't want to just rely upon a judge asking the kind of questions he or she wants to ask, thinking that it's going to then cover everything that needs to be covered.
Yeah, well, the judges are going to expect, unless they do their introduction, they're going to turn the show over to you, the representative, anyway. And I think very few judges will ever start with their own line of questioning. It's just a matter of, depending on the judge, I've had some judges, although these tended to be the ones that have now retired, they would just sit there stone-faced. They turn the hearing over to you, the advocate, and they'd have no questions. They'd offer no thoughts of the case, and they really viewed it as, this is the time for the veteran to say whatever he or she wants to say, and they're just sitting there to take it into the transcript, and they'll make their decision later, which was exactly the opposite of kind of the approach you had with Judge Crawley, who was sound like he was engaged more in a dialogue where he was giving you some thoughts about how he saw the evidence, maybe some gaps in the evidence that needed to be filled so he didn't have to do a remand. I mean, that's great. It really comes down to something that neither the veteran or the advocate has any control over, which judge. And I think some judges will just wing it. The key to success is, as we all know, it's going to be preparation. And trying to anticipate, what the judge might see as gaps in the case, and then be prepared to fill those with evidence. So, I think the other thing about this whole new appeals modernization is as we've talked about before, the tough work is all being essentially pushed towards the BBA. These higher-level reviewers at the regional office level, they're not doing a whole lot. There's no right to a personal hearing before those individuals. And any tough issues, I think they're gonna punt and leave it up to the BBA. So it just really comes down to, I think, an analysis of when you're appealing to the BBA, which of the three lanes you want to go with. You know, do you want to just rely on the evidence and the record? Is that strong enough? Or do you want to submit more evidence but you don't want a hearing? Or do you need a hearing? Because I think waiting for a hearing now is still going to be probably a 1 to 2 year wait, maybe even longer. You get any sense on that, Rick, from these?
I know this really doesn't answer your question, but I think what I'm finding is that we can't generalize the timeline, because there are situations where I've filed them and I've got one within 30 days, they set it up for a BVA hearing. How that happened, I have no idea. But it happened. So I think...
I've had that too. In fact, I had one where within just a couple months of filing the VA Form 9, this was under the legacy system, we had a hearing, and even the judge was surprised. She had no idea how the case came up for hearing so soon. But the thing about their bureaucratic system was, even though we had the hearing so soon, the case was still going to be processed for her decision based on its place in the lineup. So we didn't actually get a hearing for quite a while after that. But you're right. Some cases will get processed very quickly. I had a hearing last June, a BVA hearing. It was a video conference. It was held at the St. Pete office. The judge was in Washington. And we actually had a decision by the judge within 3 weeks after the hearing, which was a record time. You know, we've had cases where after the hearing, we've waited another year and a half for the decision. So there's no telling. I think a lot of it depends on the particular judge.
I do want to add that now that I'm thinking about Friday, there's some really super people that are working at the BVA who are non-judges, who are the ones who schedule these hearings and who assist the judges in, they're the techie people who to make sure that everything's going well for the video hearings. And these are really, really, I think, very conscientious people. Different from the VA. I got a couple of people at the VA that I can say that about, but
when you say the VA,
large,
you're talking about the regional office?
Yeah,
you say different,
yeah.
Because these are VA employees, too. They're just...
No, I know, but they work directly with the BVA, Board of Veteran Appeals, and that's all they do. They schedule the judges. They set up the videos. But they're extremely conscientious. Every time, I mean, I have their emails. I have 5 emails for different people there that I can email any given day, and they'll email me back within a few hours. Which I just think is terrific. So, you know, I know I'm one that constantly tears down the system, but I do have to give these people credit for all the good that they are doing and trying to do for our veterans. So,
there's a lot of good
and that was that's what happened this past. We had a situation where one of my witnesses was diabetic, the mother of the veteran. She was diabetic, and they were having problems on their end. And the woman, Bridget Malone's her name, she gave me her phone number, and she was the one who was working with the techies. And I called like 2 or 3 times, and I said, "How much longer, Bridget? We're working on it, Mr. Hurley. We're working on it." And I said, "I know. I don't want to adjourn, but, you know, I've got a situation with one of my witnesses. She's diabetic. She didn't eat anything. I'm trying to give her some food right now, but you know, and she said, we're going to work real hard. And sure enough, they did. And we were able to go. But we were all working together. And that's what it's all about, working together to try to get a favorable result that's based on the evidence and the right result for the veteran. And it's just nice because that's the way we should be doing these cases for veterans. The VA should be working the exact same way, doing the right thing for the veteran so that we can get these decisions made and not take an attorney. I mean, this case as it is, this case started, she filed in 2011. That's before you and I opened our doors in 2012. So this case started out before you and I even formed Corey and Hurley. So that's how long she's been hanging around with it. So anyway, I just wanted to make that point.
Yeah, well, it's good, and I think a lot of good people work for the VA. In fact, a lot of VA employees are veterans themselves, so they get it. And some of them have gone through the same process. They are disabled, and even though they're working for the VA, they've experienced the same thing that other veterans have experienced as far as the claims and the appeals process. So there's awareness there, and I think part of it is sometimes this bureaucracy is outside of their control too, and they're just trying to do the best they can with an imperfect system, but striving for continually trying to improve things. That should be the goal.
Mm-hmm.
But in any event, I think it's a great thing, as you described, that the BVA is using technology to make it easier. I mean, it's just incredible that they, in the last year or so, when they've gone to these... I mean, they've had video conferencing for years. It's just you'd have to go to the regional office typically. But now that they're allowing video conferencing from a veteran's own computer or the representative's own computer, that's a huge, huge convenience for veterans. You know, we're on the west central part of Florida where people would have to drive if you know, to St. Petersburg. We all know what the traffic is like in the St. Petersburg, Tampa area. And it's amazing to me how many, you know, when the BVA hearings are usually scheduled in two segments, the morning segment and the afternoon segment, and they would schedule a whole group of veterans for the morning session, which would start at 8:30 and run until lunchtime. Well, 8:30... that may not seem too early, but if veterans are having to drive 2 or 3 hours to get there with relatively heavy traffic in the Bay Area for the last hour of that drive, they have two choices, Rick, as you know. It means leaving very early in the morning or driving the day before and staying in a hotel. So it's a huge convenience. It's a great thing that they've sort of embraced the possibility of the technology here. So...
you know,
give
the
them
other
a
thing
lot
is,
of credit.
You know, when they set it up for 8:30, as I think you just said, they're lining up maybe 4 or 5 or 6 cases at 8:30.
Oh, I know. That's what I say. It's a group. Yeah. You know, they call in a group of people for the 8:30 session. Yeah. So you have to be there, and they'll tell you be there an hour before to do your final preparation with your representatives. Not that they have to, but if you prepared in advance, but you know you have to be there. You know, probably at least by 8:15, and yet your case might not be called until 10:30. So you're sitting there waiting, or maybe 11. So you're sitting there waiting literally for hours, or you could be the afternoon session. But I'll tell you what, maybe it was just bad luck, but most of my clients with BVA hearings, it seemed like 90% of them would get scheduled for that morning session, not the afternoon session, you know, so... which just, again, put the pressure on veterans that were driving distances to have to get up really early or drive there the night before and stay in a hotel for what might end up being a relatively short hearing. So,
you know, and then while they're there, while you're waiting, you know, in my case, I have my staff making coffee, putting out some juice. You know, we have some biscuits there, some donuts, whatever, just to, you know, make things nice, ease the tension, relax. And So anyway, so I welcome these hearings, and unfortunately, when I go for cases out of the state, I got to go actually to the hearing office itself, which is fine. But that's what's going on with the BVA right now in these hearings.
Yeah. Well, good. I've got some other news from Washington affecting veterans. Let me turn to that segment now. On February 10th, the VA announced its proposed fiscal year 2021 budget, and pretty significant dollars. And the VA is going to make its presentation in a joint hearing, as I said at the beginning of the show, on Thursday, February 27th, Thursday of this week at 10 a.m. If you want to watch the top leadership of the VA testify before the committee, the Veterans Committee, on that issue. But some of the high points of their $243+ billion budget for fiscal year 2021 includes an overall 10.2% increase from fiscal year 2020, and the goal is to reach the VA's continued commitment to veterans with high-quality health care and timely access to benefits and services. According to VA Secretary Robert Wilkie in his press release, and I quote, he said, "The budget request will ensure veterans and their families experience health improvements and technological modernization advancements. That's evidenced by the increase in the budget funds we're receiving that not only increase health care services and benefits to veterans, but allow VA to lead the way in forward-thinking innovation," unquote. So that includes an increase in funding for things like the VA Mission Act, which was passed in June of 2018, that beginning in June of 2019, the VA launched its new and improved Veterans Community Care Program. The little background on that, as you know, is that for years, some veterans have found it difficult to access timely VA health services. So the question is, what can the VA do, including partnering with and or paying for care out in the community? That's what this program attempts to address. According to the VA, more than 5,000 veterans per week are accessing the new urgent care benefits provided through the VA Mission Act, and the fiscal year 2021 budget will provide increased resources for that, as well as increased expansion of the Family Caregiver Program, expanding it to veterans that were injured in the line of duty before May of 1975. So that's another issue. Another priority of the VA is to continue addressing the problem of veteran suicide. They're increasing funding for mental health services overall. Budget request is $10.2 billion, which is a $682 million increase over the 2020 budget. And that includes $313 million for suicide prevention programs, which was a 32% increase over fiscal year 2020.
Wow, that's terrific.
Well, that's a huge increase, and you have to hope that it's not just a matter of throwing money and not having something to show for it. You know, I think it's easy for the bureaucrats to say, well, let's just pour money at this problem. That's a lot of money when you think about it, $313 million, and you got to hope that it's actually having some effect and not just creating jobs for a bunch of bureaucrats running some program. I really have to wonder about that, because you hear year after year of these statistics of the number of veterans that are taking their lives, and it doesn't seem like those numbers are dramatically improving, and yet every year the VA is spending more and more money. It's obviously an important project, but whether they're spending the money usefully or effectively is something else. Another priority in the VA's budget, they're increasing funding for women's health, for women veterans, for gender-specific women's health care. It'll expand access to gynecology, provide more primary care services for women, and enable the VA to continue to identify and serve the health care needs of women veterans. And that includes a budget proposal of $626 million, which is a $53 million or 9% increase above fiscal year 2020. Something on another issue of interest to some of the veterans that have been on our show recently in the last month and in the last year, and that's the so-called Blue Water Navy, the Vietnam veterans that were affected by Agent Orange. You know, last year, Congress passed the so-called Blue Water Navy Vietnam Veterans Act of 2019. Well, this proposed budget allocates $137 million to implement that, to continue to implement it by ensuring there's enough staff hired to support the claims, to handle call center activity, as well as conduct quality reviews, as well as to pay the claims. In fiscal year 2021, the VA is anticipating an estimated 70,000 Blue Water Vietnam veteran claims and appeals. Since January the 7th of this year through 2 weeks ago, the VA said it had received more than 14,000 of the Blue Water Navy Vietnam veterans claims and had already issued $7.5 million in retroactive benefits to 218 of those 14,000 veterans. So that's another issue. So that's one. That's another issue that we will continue to track and see how that's going.
You know, I wonder, David, go ahead. I wonder on that Blue Water Navy claims, I wonder how many of those are the widows.
I don't have that number for you, but yeah, we know.
No, I know. I know you don't, but I'm just curious to see, you know. And the thing that really kind of I'm wondering about is, because I haven't seen it, maybe you have, but, you know, I haven't seen any advertising on TV by the VA or on the radio telling veterans about, you know, the new Blue Water Navy legislation and the fact that these veterans can now be covered under that act. You know, if a veteran doesn't know about it, they're probably not going to apply for it. So somehow, you know, you got to get...
I think where the VA is counting on are these dozens of veteran organizations who are going to be testifying before Congress starting this week. You know, Vietnam Veterans of America is a major, obviously, Vietnam veterans group, but American Legion, VFW, you also have Military Veterans Advocacy, John Wells' group, which has really single-handedly won this issue between the litigation that John Wells and his group pursued successfully, as well as their lobbying Congress for years. So kudos to Military Veterans Advocacy, John Wells, and all the members of his team. But, you know, components of his organization include the Blue Water Navy organization. And I think what the reality is, I think the VA doesn't want to spend any more of its money publicizing this because it just means more work for the VA. I think that's the reality. And they probably will then say, well, we have all these other veteran organizations. That's what they do, and that's what they get paid to do, essentially, and they should be doing that. So, and they will, but that's also why we have this show, to help spread the word. And
I got a new case today. He's a Blue Water Navy veteran. He found out, he got referred to me by one of my former clients, and he said, you know, he had heard something about the Blue Water Navy Veterans Act, and he said, you know, I might want to call my lawyer and see what he can do. And so we had a nice discussion. Sure enough, he was sitting out there within 12 nautical miles of Vietnam, and he's got all the a lot of the disabilities that can be presumptively connected. So,
well, that's great. That's great. And kudos to you, Rick. I know you do a lot of work and reaching out to a lot of veterans, and you know, they owe a lot to you for the work that you do, and hopefully they in turn will help get the word out to their buddies that they serve with. I mean, that's the word of mouth. You can't underestimate the value of that.
Speaking of getting the word out, and this is one of my pet peeves, and I know it's one of yours too, David. You know, we have a lot of younger veterans from Iraqi and Afghanistan wars. And you older vets, especially Vietnam vets who maybe waited 30 or 40 years before you decided to file for a claim. I know this has happened in my office countless times. And I would ask, well, you know, why'd you wait so long? And I've got, you know, all sorts of different responses from, you know, they didn't realize they had a claim to, well, I just didn't want to deal with it or, you know, whatever the case may be. So we don't want that same thing to happen to our Iraqi and Afghanistan veterans. And, you know, the little bit of compensation that they could get, if, let's say they get 100%, you know, is enough to keep many of these men and women in a home, not homeless, not on the street, not in the woods of Central Florida. So you older veterans, if you see a younger veteran, push them to file the claim. And, you know, they're going to, you're probably going to hear stuff. I don't have time, whatever the case may be, but you got to push them and say to them, you know, you're going to live to be a ripe old age of 80 or 90 years old. And think about that money that you can have coming in for the rest of your life. You know, if you start doing the math, it turns out to be a lot of money that can help support you for the rest of your life. And I'm a firm believer that, you know, when you signed up for military service, your contract just didn't end when you left the service. Your contract continued all the way until you die, because you're entitled to burial benefits. So take advantage of the system. There's money there for you. There's plenty of money. Just because you may not have lost a limb or suffered some trauma, if you had some sort of disability and it's covered under the diagnostic code with the VA, then it's compensatory. Go get your money. There's plenty of money in the system. There's veterans dying each and every day who no longer will be using that money. So that money's just getting recycled back out. So go get it. Take care of yourself. Go take care of your family. Put your pride in your back pocket and apply for VA benefits. That's my speech.
Yeah. Well, I think what's also going to be interesting is in upcoming years, when the costs of these wars, and as you know, what are we talking about a few minutes ago? Vietnam veterans, the Blue Water Navy. You know, we pulled our last troops out of Vietnam in 1973, 47 years ago. Okay, 50 years from now, the veterans of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars are going to be you know, in their 70s and 80s, because the war has been going on for 20 years. Some of them will be even older. But we're going to see a repeat of the Vietnam veteran issues with issues that were very prevalent with those two wars, the traumatic brain injury, you know, because of the IEDs. With post-traumatic stress, but also an issue we've discussed a lot on the show in the past, which is the toxic exposures, the open-air burn pits, affecting a lot of veterans, not all the veterans, but many veterans. So the projection is, you know, how many hundreds of billions and even trillions of dollars are going to be needed over the next 50, 60 years for that. And my point being, it wouldn't surprise me, because there are organizations out there, and one of them is the Concerned Veterans for America, which are advocating for a complete fresh look at how the VA deals with disabilities and how the VA prioritizes its resources, with a greater emphasis on rehabilitation instead of perpetual just throwing money at the problem, so to speak, with disability, but to put a greater emphasis than is now being done on rehabilitating, retraining, and getting veterans employed. So that's a whole nother kind of out-of-the-box perspective that it's all, you know, we'll see what the political arena does with those issues. But I think what we're going to encounter is something that we've already seen over the last 10 years, which is as much money as the VA has, it's the second largest government agency, huge budget, they have finite resources. And so veterans are finding they can't get timely health care. Some veterans, a lot of veterans are very happy with the VA health care system, but some are finding that they can't get timely access. So then you get into the problem of care in the private sector. When is it going to be paid for the VA? When it's not going to get paid for the VA? And the VA is understaffed for its doctors and other medical professionals. We've talked about this on the show for the last couple years, you know, the tens of thousands of open positions that the VA can't fill. It reflects a shortage nationwide of nurses and physician assistants and doctors. So it's not unique to the VA, but it's going to be there. So the point is, it's essentially resulting in basically the VA having to essentially ration the care. People don't want to use that term. But the same thing with the money. It really is not unlimited. And with a huge national deficit every year, $1 trillion in the foreseeable future, I think at some point there could be a pushback and say there isn't unlimited money and is not unlimited money, and perhaps a whole new thinking needs to be done. So anyway, we'll see.
Then we don't go to war.
Well, that brings us to a topic before we run out of time real quickly. I think you're absolutely right, Rick, and let me segue before we go to coaching to care, which is another project that we have. Particular interest to me is our Stop War Today project. Go to our website, stopwar.today. This is not some pacifist, naive program. This is an intelligent, well-thought-out effort to help minimize war. And we are publicizing the work of a number of organizations, including the Cost of War Project for Brown University, also the United States Institute of Peace, which I'd venture to say most Americans have never even heard of, even though it was created by Congress in 1984. Check out its website, usip.org, United States Institute of Peace. Rick Hurley and I have both been there. We attended a conference back in October of 2018, but for those of you that can't get to their headquarters in Washington, check out their website, usip.org. They've got a YouTube channel where you can watch their conferences, live stream them if you want. And then the third thing I want to help publicize is to kind of the new way of thinking on how we can realistically prevent war and shorten war. A good book to read is called A Mighty Case Against War by Kathy Beckwith. Outstanding book. It provides insightful analysis of America's past wars and ways that they could have been prevented. And it also provides a path to a new way of thinking on how to promote peace and stop glorifying war. I have free copies of the book, A Mighty Case Against War. If you want a copy, just send me an email with your name and address. My email address is lawcorey1@verizon.net. That's LAWCORY, the number one, at verizon.net. Over to you, Rick.
Thanks, David. And before I get into coaching into care, just want to remind our listeners that all our shows are archived. I would specifically like to refer you to our last week's show. We had a great guest, David Malsby, from Camp Hope. It was just a terrific hour show with David talking about PTSD. I invite all of our guests to go back and listen to that show, get some understanding about PTSD and Camp Hope. Coaching into Care is a program for our veterans and the families. It's a very important VA program. It helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching into Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give that program a call at toll-free 1-888-823-7458. Again, 1-888-823-7458. Its hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Again, the VA's Coaching into Care number is 1-888-823-7458. Let's help our veterans get some independence in their life after they leave the service. In addition, I would like to once again remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind. The U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has a veteran crisis line. Please call at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. As you know, many veterans have committed suicide because they did not get the help they need. Help them get the care they need to cope with those problems. Once again, that number at the Veterans Crisis Line is 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Back to you, David.
I'd like to thank you all for listening to the Veterans News Hour here on BBS Radio Station 1. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Joyce and Joe Civaroli and Corey and Hurley Law Group. We'd also like to thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom. Please tune in next week, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 Central, 5 Mountain, and 4 p.m. Pacific Time here on bbsradio.com, Station 1, for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. Until then, we hope you have a great week.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on bbsradio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.